Let's open the episode this week by saying thank you to people that listen.
That's a great call. Thank you to everyone that listens. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening.
If you will consent to burden your soul with a vow that you should never make and a knowledge you should never dream about, I will promise you in return...
You will promise me in return...
I will promise you a very entertaining evening.
Your offer is far too idiotic to be declined. Permit me here and now to promise as a good comrade and a fellow artist that I will not report any of this, whatever it is, to the police.
But I have a very good friend of mine who's Canadian. And we met, we bonded over The Replacements. And he turned me on to the Tragically Hip. Like, must have been the second week of school. He's like, oh, I got to play this band for you. It was the Corn Dogs.
Well, don't know.
I was like, Jeff, this is awful. He's like, what are you talking about?
Why would you like, do this?
30 years on, we still talk about the Corn Dogs.
I need to look them up because I don't actually know who they are. That's so strange. They're Canadian?
Yes.
I'm going to go and get deep into this catalog tonight, though, because I love to eat corn dogs. So then how could I not like the music?
Game rolling.
Welcome to Abandoned Albums, the documentary podcast where we take a closer look at your favorite albums from yesterday, from today, and from tomorrow. I'm your host, Keith R. Higgins, and joining me, as always, is the master of ceremonies, Mr. Jeff Calhoun.
Oh, Lord, have mercy.
Good evening. Since we're all strangers to each other, let's get acquainted with a drink, shall we?
On this episode of Abandoned Albums, Keith and Jeff welcome singer, songwriter, and three-time Juno Award nominee Del Barber into Thunderlove Studio.
I turn the yard light off so I can wonder at the star. The weather woman says, look out for Jupiter and Mars. Hoping we got this corner turned. All the best things we have, we just didn't earn. There's a big storm coming, I can feel it in my knees. I can hear the thunderheads groaning out in the east. I got a freezer full of meat and a fridge full of beer. Expect a crooked path if you're letting me steer. I'm lucky in love, my belly's full. I never could grab the horns of the bull. I try to believe the man on the news. The whole world goes to shit, well, I still got you.
My introduction to Americana goes like this. Sometime around the mid to late 90s, as grunge had worn its... it didn't wear its welcome, but whatever. It got a little tired for me.
It ran its course.
For me, it did. And a friend of mine, she sent me a Newsweek article, I think it was, that said... The title was Country and Westerberg. And it was about Whiskey Town. And I was like, I'm on board with this. And then I dove in and I was like, all right, well, I like this. It melded a lot of what I liked. It's roots, it's rock and roll. There's still plenty of rock there, but it's got a flavor of country to it. I don't need to really define Americana, but that was my introduction to it. I'm like, oh, wow, I like this.
Hitting the palate at the right time in your life is hugely important to how we form memories about music and how we receive it. So yeah, that makes a ton of sense to me. What's interesting about Del Barber for me is that this is a cat that musically, I think you put him squarely in that Americana bucket. And I think that if you take the time to listen in earnest to what he's saying, I think he's a terrific lyricist. But you get a very distinctly Canadian vibe in some of his tunes that does make it just a little bit in the Americana genre. You got to do something a little different to stand out for me. And so I think that's it for me, is that I think he's a great songwriter that really does paint a nice vivid picture, and he's coming from an interesting place.
Yeah, I think he's a great lyricist. Reminds me a lot of a bunch of artists that I like.
When I hear influences for this dude, like, I'm picking up notes from all over the spectrum. Like, I think he's a Counting Crows fan, maybe. So
let's just jump into it.
Let's do it.
Here's our conversation with Del Barber. Del, thank you so much for joining Jeff and I.
It's a pleasure is mine. Thanks for having me on.
Congratulations on Almanac.
Thank you.
It's a very good record.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
I was listening to your work and listening to your body of work, and I heard a lot of influences, and then I pulled up the Wikipedia and I looked, and I'm like, all right, you know, Greg Brown, I was happy to see. I love Greg Brown.
Oh, man.
John Prine.
That's great.
Townes Van Zandt, Springsteen, Lucinda. The one that threw me off, Del, was Rancid. It's like, which of these things is not like the other? And Rancid was there. Can you walk us through that? Well,
yeah, absolutely. Now, Wikipedia is a place where I cannot even edit my own page. Once I found out I had a Wikipedia page, I looked at it and I was like, well, whoever wrote this got a bunch of things wrong. So all that, and there's a bunch of things right, and someone did a pile of work to make that happen, and so that's cool with me. But yeah, I was a punk kid. I grew up playing in punk bands, and Rancid especially through my, like, from probably 14 to 18 was, like, one of the main bands I listened to. I listened to, like, Rancid and then all the Fat Records bands. That was just who I was when I was a teenager, and that, like, I can't really avoid being informed by that type of scrappy energy. So yeah, that's how Rancid fits in. I think ultimately, I think it's another kind of folk music, you know, and I really I love it. And I still dive into them every so often for sure.
Oh, I want to unpack that in 1 second, but I just want to tell you a quick story about Wikipedia. There was an article about 10 years ago from Mike Scott of the Waterboys, where he went into Wikipedia because there was a bunch of information incorrect, and he tried to change it. And the editor of the page, like, no, that's wrong. And he's like, no, it's right. And went back and forth. And finally he said, listen, I'm Mike Scott. This is my information. I'm telling you, you have the wrong information. And the editor was right. He said, until you can prove it, I can't change it. He made nice with the editor and they worked it out. And he said, until he wrote his autobiography, that would be the most accurate information about him because he was contributing to it.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's actually spot on. Everyone's been thinking a lot about how memory works, and there's been a bunch of great stories about remembering events from a decade ago, and our memories are not exactly factually accurate anyway. And so it takes a group of people to decide what happened to one person. And in terms of, like, how we're influenced, that story changes too. And, It's not really up to me to decide who I was influenced by. It is up to, like, a group. If they're interested at all, why they would be, I don't know. But since they are, I'm happily engaged in the fact that it's not really up to me to decide who I am.
I want to circle back real quick. Punk rock as folk rock.
It's folk music, yeah.
Folk music. I've never heard that before. That's interesting.
I think of, like, hip hop as a type of folk music as well.
Sure.
And, you know, in some ways, especially with the state of whatever is folk music right now, I think, like, rap music or hip hop is probably, like, the most relevant folk music right now. I mean, and not in every example, but certainly in some. I think, like, music that comes out of, like, a specific cultural framework, it's for some reason to me, it relates to folk music just in the same way that, like, all the different kinds of world music is folk music. And I don't think it's, like, deeper than that for me, but to say that it's not folk music, I think is a mistake. And I definitely saw, like, the punk rock movement coming out of England, like, as I understood it growing up, the sort of revolutionary bent, and we're going to do things our own way, at our own speed, to hell with the rules. I think that's folk music in a way to me. So
interesting.
I don't know if that answers your question or not. If you think I'm wrong, I'd love to hear about it. I just something I said off the cuff, and I'm not really like.
There's no right or wrong. I think it's an interesting perspective. I hadn't thought of it like that, to be honest with you.
I think for folk music to actually be a thing that matters, it has to be more than like how it sounds or its aesthetic.
Last week with Mo Troper, we were talking about power pop, and a lot of people, I think, interpret mm-hmm. power pop as more style over substance. It's kind of what we're talking about here, where I don't think folk music, if you take away the sound as style, right, and just get into the substance of it, yeah. I think you can genre hop all you want musically.
I would agree with that.
Keith, you brought up influences. I want to tell you what I hear in your music, Dell, and what's perhaps interesting. I do hear a very pleasant, like, back note of Counting Crows in there, which...
Oh, nice.
I think is a nice mix to the rest of your music. Very subtle notes of it.
You know, I guess I've never been honest about that with myself. I'm thinking about how I probably wore out two copies of August and Everything After.
Because it's an incredible record.
I agree. But I've never really thought about them. Maybe because they were so popular at the time. You know, when we think about our influences, we're trying to sort of like get into the nitty gritty of like,
yeah,
who matters to us.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, what's the real answer? It's like, what have you listened to the most?
Yeah.
And how much time have you actually been indoctrinated by these records? And that record in particular, and Recovering the Satellites, is that what that one's called?
Yeah, that's my favorite.
Yeah. That's a great record too. And it's crazy that I can just name record titles from that band who I would have never assumed is an influence, but clearly is, you know, since you brought it up. So well, good ears, man. You got big ears.
He does.
Yeah. I think you can kind of bounce around. I hear a little bit of Avett Brothers. Again, subtle notes of Avett Brothers. Cool. And I guess I'm taking a long way around to my final question on influences, which is, you could probably fit in with a lot of what people call alt country or Americana. I think it's interesting that you fit so well in a genre called Americana as someone who is clearly quite Canadian.
Yeah. I'm often too Canadian, you know?
Really?
That's been a common criticism from the industry folks.
Is this because you're nice?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely too many sorries.
Canada gooses are majestics, barrel-chesteds, the envies of all ornithologies.
They are leaders, born and bred leaders.
Canada gooses are very fucking guard.
You know, I saw two Canada gooses mount a swan one time, and you gotta think that swan told her friends about it.
You're goddamn right she did.
Look, the geese...
Gooses!
They're just pheasants with better marketing.
If you play the Beatles' White Album backwards, you know what you hear? Canada gooses.
Same thing for Michael Jackson's Thriller.
And everything Shania Twain's ever recorded.
I can't escape writing about where I'm from, and especially like my particular pocket of rural Canada. And so that always shows up on my records, and I think in some ways it does me a great disservice. But you also just, you know, you can't lie about yourself and expect anyone to listen to you. So at least as far as I'm concerned, I think everybody's looking for sincerity on some level.
Mm-hmm.
We convince ourselves that we're being sincere, and it's really hard to know if you are until you realize you haven't been. I mean, I even just like social examples of being at a party or something and saying a stupid thing and then asking yourself after, why would I have said that thing to that person? What was I trying to accomplish? That was not something that I would say. That wasn't even like the same language I would use, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Call it pretense, whatever you want. I think making music's like pretty similar to that. Trying really hard to vet your sincerity, for me, the way I vet it is by making sure that my like local community understands that I'm a full-fledged member who's committed to like telling our stories. And whether that means I have a career or not, to answer your alt country question, yeah, That's the genre I always associated with. That's the reason I moved to Chicago, because of like bands like Wilco, Northside Chicago, living in Jeff Tweedy's neighborhood, going to university, playing open mics. That's how I cut my teeth. That's what I wanted to sound like. The Uncle Tupelo and Wilco sound that I needed to figure out a way to make steel guitar happen on the record without it sounding like it was trying to be pop country or like pandering, you know? And now that it has like a sort of bigger place in whatever we're calling Americana, I think it's probably good for guys like me.
For sure.
But I think that there's a little bit of a problem with Americana in terms of its identity and how much it tries to swallow up, how many genres. I feel in some ways that like the alt country genre doesn't get as much credence because of Americana. It kind of steals a little bit from it.
Hmm.
And that's something that is just sort of growing pains, I guess, for a genre like this. You know,
I consider Americana and alt country almost interchangeable.
Yeah. But I don't know. Look at like, do you think the Lumineers are alt country? Because they're playing the Americana Awards every year.
Huh.
The genre is stretching into sort of like adult alternative and
yes,
trying to and soul, and there's nothing wrong with this, but it's just trying to swallow up the things that don't have the most obvious genre to rely on, and even like, because there's no place for rock and roll bands right now, it seems, you know, you add a little bit of you know, particularly personal content or something, and all of a sudden your rock band is playing Americana festivals. And I think it's just a sign that it's growing and it's confused. And it's like, you know, it's like a teenager.
I was
like,
just going to say the same thing.
Yeah.
The awkward stage.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just, and that should be embraced as something that's cool. Like, you know, when teenagers get the freedom to try different outfits on, to figure out who they are, and I think that's like a great, that's what I would love my kids to be able to do, is to like have a some version of discovery in their life where they get to decide what it is they're doing and what they're about. And I don't think that Americana knows yet. My partner, she's a teacher, and she spends a lot of time with teenagers, and oftentimes they seem to really think they know who they are and the way the world should be, and I was that way. I think that's just another sort of piece of evidence that Americana is sort of finding itself. I'm happy to be involved in some small way in the genre and the association and everything to try and figure out who we are and what this thing actually is, so...
You mentioned your community being important to you, that it's represented in the music. The description for you on Spotify reads that in writing these 12 songs for the new album, you adhered more than ever to a prairie aesthetic.
I live in a town. I live just outside of a town of like 200 people. It's a place where you need your neighbors desperately. You like rely on each other. There's no like, speaking of Greg Brown, he had this story about like communes and intentional communities. And he was talking about Iowa in one of his live records. He was talking about Iowa, or like he was talking about the UP in this one particular story, Upper Peninsula, Michigan. It's like a place where you need your neighbors. And that's exactly the type of place I live in. We all rely on each other. We don't really care which way our neighbors vote. We do make some assumptions about that, but that's secondary.
Yeah,
our politics are way more importantly served helping each other out, and in some ways, I'm trying to celebrate the fact that like rural Canada and rural America is becoming more and more diverse. Like, in terms of people immigrating from all over the world because it's cheaper to live rurally. There's way more businesses starting up that are because of, you know, shipping routes and the internet and everything, where like smaller factories can start up rurally. I'm trying to document what it means to be, you know, a small town bumpkin. Trying to show that it's not as homogenous as people assume sometimes, and trying to tell those particular stories and then hopefully have some level of universal appeal to them, you know, like, that's the dangerous part. It's like, because it's such a small place and you get stuck, talking to the same 40 people all the time, it's hard to know whether or not that these people's hardships, gratitudes, multitudes are going to have a universal appeal whatsoever. And I guess the job of the songwriter, wherever they live, wherever they're from, is to try and bridge that gap. And that's my whole like life's mission is like separate the distance between urban and rural people. The difference is not as great as anyone thinks. And to try and celebrate the things we do well here and romanticize them and also criticize the things we're really bad at.
Hockey is very important in the Canadian world. Now,
yeah,
this is kind of a question, okay. kind of a gripe. You recorded
good.
Del Barber and the No Regretskis.
Yeah.
Recorded The Puck Stops Here.
Yeah.
Missing from the song list, I thought, was 50 Mission Cap by the Tragically Hip.
Totally. Love that song.
That is one of my favorite songs. And it's a great story.
Yeah, so this record is much discussed in my circles as being a giant there are people that love this record and there are people that absolutely think it was a giant mistake to make. Now, the truth of the matter is that I couldn't convince my record label to put out my record. So in the middle of the night, I don't know how many years ago this is, 7 years ago, I sent this email to my record label at the time in Canada. What about a hockey record? And literally the next day I got a yes and money was in the bank. And the pitch to them was that this would be a record called The No Regretskis. My name wouldn't be on it. I'll just make a record about hockey for fun. And I was excited about it. I love songs about hockey. I'm Canadian. Like I grew up playing hockey. I've been obsessed with the game since I was like old enough to I remember I skated before I walked. You know, that this is the truth of my life. In terms of 50 Mission Cap and in terms of a whole pile of songs, it was a very low budget record. I demoed 50 hockey songs and we had 2 days to make the record. And whichever songs even turned out half decent made the cut. And so it was just like, it wasn't a matter of like careful selection. It was like, what sounds good? What feels good? What can we pull off right now? That's how that record was made. you know, you can hear the punk influence on that record. You, like, just the scrappiness of it. It felt like playing hockey in the playoffs in high school. And that's the spirit I love of that sport, is that it's about grit and toughness. And I wish 50 Mission Cap would have turned out better.
Are you saying there's a demo of it?
Yeah, of course. I demoed them all. That's how I approach all records. I'm going to have like 40 songs going into a recording, and I'm just going to go with the ones that are working at that time. And I'm not Fleetwood Mac at Sound City, you know, like I don't have months and hundreds of thousands of bucks to burn. And that would be a dream, but I probably would also get, I would probably put it up my nose or something. I don't know.
So, they did.
I mean, that's what I mean. And how could you not?
When you talk about recording, I do want to ask you a question about recording in a silo. I have never been in a silo. I grew up in Minnesota and Ohio, so I have a mental image of a silo.
Yeah, sure.
What acoustics were you getting in there that you couldn't get or replicate in a studio?
I took this from a Neil Young recording concept. So he would use specific, I don't know if it was grain bins or what he used on his farm, but they would use entire rooms as their reverb tanks. It's the same in, like, if you go to some of the classic studios in Memphis, like Sun Records or whatever, they have reverb tanks, usually in the basement. You can determine how much echo you want on a particular track based on how much water you put into this tank. So, like, you know, there's this, you can picture a giant tank getting filled with water, and the space that sound has to reverberate gets smaller and smaller the more the tank gets filled up, right?
Right.
So you can, like, change the quality of the effect on the reverb on your vocal or on acoustic guitar, whatever you want to use it on. And I'm just interested in, like, actually weaving in sonics from the infrastructure that's around. And because I spend like the other half of my life on a farm, I enter into these acoustic spaces that are so intriguing. You know, you walk into an empty silo. It's this giant concrete tube that seems to go infinitely high above you. Right. And the sound just like, it just like travels through that thing. And so what we did at my request, which ended up taking like 60 hours, just day after day, we put every single track through the silo and re-recorded it. So then we could, in post-production, then we could choose how much silo we wanted to have on that particular track.
Wow.
So you have your voice, let's say, and then beside it, you have a fader that has the silo effect, and you can put lots of silo or a little bit of silo on it based on what your preference is. And for me, it was just like, I just had the ability to just sit there and just record every single take we had. Recorded the entire drum kit through the silo, like basically we've recorded the drums in a studio, and then we play the drums back to the silo and record it.
Got it.
You know, and then we do that with every instrument and on every track. So some of these tracks have like 100 tracks on them.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was unnecessary, and it was also just like a process of me learning how things worked. And you know, I get obsessed with stuff like this, and just was desperate to try and like put an original stamp on the record in some way. And so that was like was right next to the barn where all my first punk bands rehearsed. So it was also just like being at home in some way.
It's dark tonight, dark as it gets. The snow has turned to rain and back to snow. I'm driving hard and fast. north and west, aching for a taste of home. Call me on the cell, tell me we got a chance, that our little dreams are adding up to something grand. Tell me no word, no road, no storm can take what we had. White lines and tail lights will carry me through. Pray these wheels, they turn and never stop till I make it home to you.
In 2019, there was a really groovy tribute to the Weaker Thans, and you were featured on it with One Great City.
Anything, anytime someone says Weaker Thans, I'm in. It was one of those things where I just had to pay out of pocket to record a song. They told me what song to record, and I would have done any of them. I don't know. I just think the writing is just next level, and been a fan of John K. Sampson and that band like since I can remember it. Like that band took me from my punk phase into making me think about what it means to say something particular about the world. And I feel like I wouldn't be a songwriter without John K. Sampson. So and that was cool because the first guy I called up to see if he'd be interested in recording the song with me was a guy in the touring band, Rusty Mattis. He played guitar and aux instruments for them their last like three tours. And he runs a recording studio in Winnipeg. And I was like, man, if you want to record this for me, I don't have much money. But he's like, oh, of course. So it was just in and out in a day, and Rusty played all the instruments basically except for acoustic guitar and vocals, and we just played around with it and tried to stay true to the original hook. And yeah, I don't know. It was just it's a pleasure to be asked to get to do stuff like that.
Another day's nearly done. A darker gray is breaking through a lighter one. A thousand sharpened elbows in the underground. That hollow hurried sound.
I wish there were more things like that happening in music, you know, like not to just bring it all back to punk, but like when I was growing up, bands were always covering band songs and like doing split records where like, you know, like any cool indie rock, indie punk band would record three of their friends' band songs, and then the other band would record three of theirs, and they'd put out a, you know, 7-inch or something.
Yeah.
Just like, I just wish that we had the ability to do stuff like that and make it more tie some of those knots in our community a little better. Yeah. Tributes would be a great way to do that.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Halfwits, the game show that's fun and at times extremely trying. Let's meet our contestants. Darren Peel. Darren, good to have you back.
Thank you, Alec, and we'd like to have you over for dinner real soon.
Uh-huh. Now, Darren, you were telling us you're in machine parts. Is that correct?
That is correct, Alec. I sort ball bearings for a living. I have two pails at work. In one pail, I'll put good ball bearings, and in the other, I'll put the bad ones.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a demanding job.
It is for me.
I want to ask you about the song No Easy Way Out.
Nice.
Which is about the gas station attendant. Can you tell us a little bit about that? How long she's been there? Is she still there? What? I mean, you get a little bit from the story, but...
She's still there as far as I know. I mean, these songs about particular characters are something that I do a lot. And they definitely come from one particular character. I'm trying to sort of make them about the archetype. So there's some other stuff built into her that I think... doesn't have to be specifically her. But yeah, it's a real person. And she, you know, it's this kind of rough little oil town in Western Manitoba. And I got to know her over the years. And I thought I got her entire story out of her. And then I look at this local newspaper one day, and the headline is like, Verdon woman. Verdon's the town where she's from, where she works the co-op gas bar. Verdon woman fends off gunmen on Friday night or whatever. So I called her up and I was like, come on, this can't be real. Are you okay? What happened? She's like, oh, it's not the first time. And I was like, oh my God. So she's like, you want to hear about the first time? It's way more interesting. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna write this down. And she doesn't know the songs about her. Like, she knows me as a farmer. So, you know, and I live like an hour and a half from there or something. But that's the exact reason I'm writing songs is about people like her, to try and like tell those stories about, like, especially like the strong independent women that sort of rule where I live. They're an essential sort of piece of this fabric and their stories are often told without nuance. You know, they're either like regaled as heroes or as people that are nothing. And I think that the sort of the middle is the interesting part where actually the difference is made a little bit, you know. That's up there for me for one of my favorites of all time that I've penned, so I appreciate that.
It's just a gas station on Highway 1. I've been working here forever, off and on. It's Rockstar and Red Bull, smokes and chips. Guys wandering here lost, sick of the shape they're in. Graffiti in the bathroom stall. Saves for a good time call. I don't know how I'm still hanging around, looking for an easy way out. Now diesel costs more than gas. Those whiny roughnecks with the lift kits, they can kiss my ass. And they all just want to get laid or paid. I hear the same damn thing day after day. Graffiti in the bathroom stall. stalls. Jesus saves for a good time call.
I'm going to follow it up because it's a great, you mentioned archetypes. You go right into Jared off the new record. Yeah. Almanac is now, is Jared an archetype, or is that a particular individual?
So Jared is a song about a career criminal, gangster, and I worked at a rehab center growing up in my early 20s and just basically spent my, you know, 9 to 5 around drug addicts and criminals. And my job there was driving them around. So like if they had doctor's appointments and support dates, I would be the guy to take them there. And I drove this guy to his second degree murder trial for like 4 weeks. And this is just an attempt to try and empathize with his worldview. He wasn't upset when they hauled him away in cuffs. I kind of felt like we became friends over that period. I was with him every day for like sometimes 8 hours.
Wow.
Like sitting in the courtroom, driving him back and forth. And, you know, I just think that there's like interesting alternative views on our world. And he seemed to just smile through all of it, you know? And that, what that song is about, like archetypally, is the person in this world that really embraces like come what may. And I wonder if I could be more like him, even though he's the guy that's locked up right now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If I could be a little bit more open to the consequences of my actions. And I also wonder how many decisions it would take for me to end up in his position.
Let's hope several.
I think several, but that's only because I'm lucky and I have a good family and, you know.
It's true.
A guy like that, I don't want to like celebrate crime or criminals at all. That's not the point. I think that there is something bigger that I'm trying to point at there. And I love that song too. And I sing that one every night and I hope that people aren't, you know, I'm not really into like the idea of a murder ballad as like a thing that we need to keep sort of beating drum. We need to keep beating, but
it's a great song.
Thanks, man.
Jared was 6 foot tall, 300 pounds. His shoulders were wide and his belly was round. His mouth was the size of a quarter, but he always wore smile. It was a pleasure to have around when the nights got wild. We were driving late October in a souped up Escalade. Two old thugs talking about their feelings and all the mistakes we made. It's hard to know just how you end up wherever you're at till you're driving around with 25 grand and unmarked bills and a big black Cadillac. I ain't chasing that lonely feeling. I ain't looking for a way out. I'm just making the most of what's on my toast and then I'm choking every single crumb down. I ain't saying I'm a good man, but I sure as hell ain't all bad. I keep myself from wanting what those other people have.
I do want to point out one specific lyric that really hit home for me. It's on Still Got You. Expect a crooked path if you're letting me steer.
Yeah, you like that one. That's good. I like that one too.
I really like that one.
That's cool. And that's like one of the few songs on the record that like there's like three maybe where I basically decide I don't need to write in character. I can just tell it how I see it, as simple as I see it. I really like that line because it does illustrate exactly who I am. It's one of those things where I just like can sum this thing up and, you know, hopefully you don't need the safest, easiest, most boring life to come home to, because that's not what you're going to get with me. And my friends would all agree, like, we're going to be doing something different all the time.
I'm going to back up a couple albums.
Do it.
Love Is Just a Wrecking Ball seems to have a little more wind in its sails than some of the other singles that you've put out into the world. And I think this is pure conjecture on my part, Del. I think it's because it was included on an alt country playlist made by Spotify that they offer to fans of all of those other great bands, that you're actually towards the top of that playlist. I'm wondering if that's a song, you know, because that's Where the City Ends was 2009. It's been almost 15 years.
Yep.
Is that a song that you're still going back to and playing live? And
no.
Well, you can cut that.
No, it's actually an interesting question, man. I did not know that it's the highest streaming song. I can't get Spotify to put any of my new stuff on playlists.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, maybe I should play it. I mean, I consider playing it. I just find it so dreadfully long. So many verses. There's like 3 verses to that song. It strikes me as like a guy in his 20s who thinks he's a little bit more important than he actually is. I think that's who wrote that.
South, they're begging me to leave. Home that has been built on these sharp shoulders. On a dark and frozen morning in the cave of February, Chicago calls and I can't. Oh, I can't be there. If there ever was a way I could keep these boots moving without stirring up trouble like I always do. My feet, they found those landmines and my heart's loaded gun. Desire's got his finger on the trigger and he's asking about you. Wide as Kansas, Arizona skin and dark masking curls. Remember her is just who's around there steady. Love is just a wrecking ball and I am just a
fool. I have like fond memories of that record. But I can't even tell you what key that song's in, you know? I think you're right though. Why wouldn't I? I should play it. I should learn it and play it. I did write it. I know it, but
apparently it needs to be back in the set list, man.
Yeah, for sure. So weird.
On the new record, I told you so earlier, we were talking about memories.
Yeah.
There's the line in there. So memories won't come clear.
Yeah, some memories won't come clear.
I interpret that as like intentional. I is that the hazy fog that memories always stay in? I just love the line. It just, that really popped for me. What that might mean as the songwriter.
Yes, that's a heavy one for me. So I wrote that about my neighbor. Her husband died in this like pretty tragic tractor accident on the highway. And I, until that point, I had never really lost anybody who was essential in my life. I had lost grandparents, and that was hard. And so I was just trying to empathize with her. I didn't even know him. And so I wrote this song just trying to, like, empathize with somebody who lost everything all at once and who had a lot of life to deal with. You know, she had a farm and a pile of animals, land, just stuff that they figured out together forever. And then just like that, boom, he's gone. And she's tough enough to take it all. But, you know, when I hung out with her, oftentimes she would just end up completely wrecked, like falling apart because she just had no one else to do that with. So I wrote this song trying to empathize with her, trying to like pick these little pictures to try and describe what that might be like.
In the washed out light of spring come late, everything that was tied down is teetering. The doors are locked, the lights are off, but the phone still rings. I'm counting sticky cup holder quarters for coffee. Forgot my wallet in a rush for no good reason. If I could just call you now so you could make fun of me. No one wants to hear I told you so. Shut your dirty mouth, I told you so. Some memories won't come clear, I told you so. So I told you so. I told you so.
My biggest co-writer was my dad, and whenever I had a good idea for a song, I would send it to him. And we wrote a lot of songs together through the years, you know. And I sent him this song, and he loved it. And he didn't have the heart to tell me, but that, like, the same day I sent him that song was the same day he found out that basically he was dying of cancer.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so it was like all of those things I was trying to empathize were, like, becoming real, you know, like, all at once.
Wow.
There it was. And it was like, it wasn't, it, that song has become, like, an essential part of my show. But it's also, you know, it's just something that informs my understanding of how songs work. I don't want to get too woo-woo about it all, but, there is something that about really good songs and poems and paintings and art that can slip in and out of time a little bit. And I really, I feel like that song for me now is like twice as palpable as when I wrote it, intending it to be about this completely different scenario. And now I have to like sing it from my own perspective every night, you know?
Wow.
And in terms of memories, when you lose somebody, there's a bunch of those things that you wish you could remember their voice better.
Mm-hmm.
You wish you could remember like the way they cooked, the thing they cooked that you loved, all those particular things.
Mm-hmm.
You have like foggy attachments to those things. And then some of the really hard stuff seems like way too particularly clear.
Yeah.
You know? So I think that's what that song's trying to get at. And it's basically, you know, trying to deal with grief and to do it in a way that isn't like woe is me. I love that song and I'm really proud of that one too.
It should be.
Del, I think you'll find you're amongst strong practitioners of the woo.
Nice.
So feel free to bring out the woo-woo.
That's good. I can't really escape it in this industry. Like, there's just so much of it around, and I try really hard to be a hard-nosed pragmatist, but I get sucked up in the sort of like goofiest of the goofy spiritual practices, and I just can't help it, you know. And I'm like, I'm shake it, but like stuff like that happens, and you know, you feel like you've like foreshadowed a bunch of stuff. It just seems like sometimes there's just things that feel just a little bit too synchronistic or coincidental to ignore the idea that there might be something else happening.
Yeah.
You know who else is a strong practitioner of the woo that is another potential subtle influence in your music, Del, is another guest of the podcast, Glenn Phillips, I think. I can hear a little...
Cool.
Oh, for sure.
A little bit of Glenn Phillips and Toad the Wet Sprocket in some of your tunes.
Oh, that's so cool, man. Thank you. I take that one. I put that in my cap.
Yeah, for sure. Wow. Oh. Great connect on that one, Jeff.
Thank you.
Just big ears on Jeff, eh?
It's not just these beautiful cans, you know?
Speaking of the woo, and Greg Brown, when I lived in California, I saw Greg Brown and Bo Ramsey in Berkeley in a church.
Yeah, that's the best.
It was just fantastic. And it was just
first time I saw Greg was in Chicago. I was going to school there. I felt like I witnessed it. It was the closest thing I had to like a spiritual awakening or a revival. I was like, where are you guys tomorrow night? I'm going. Yeah. Like, you know. And for me, Greg Brown was like everything I wanted to say.
Yeah.
Comedy, tragedy, all of it. Mm-hmm. Didn't take himself too seriously. Mm-hmm. Man, I'm pissed that he's quote-unquote retired. Yeah, we'll see. Hopefully he'll just say, oh, sorry, just like every other, like Motley Crue, he'll just come
back. Oh, good Lord.
No. No. Let Fat Vince retire, so. Please.
But they've tried to retire 3 times, so.
You're just wrapped up a tour of Canada. Any plans to come?
So, yeah, I'm actually a dual citizen, so there's no reason I shouldn't be touring the States more. My mom's family's all from Wisconsin.
Okay.
And I lost my booking agent in the States, like, right around pandemic time, and so I've just been trying to figure out how to get shows there again, because I don't know how to do the hustle by myself. I'm playing solo again. I haven't played solo in a while, so that'll be fun.
Cool.
Just like doing the singer-songwriter thing, and
it's good work if you can get it.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great way to pay the mortgage, and I live in a place where songwriters can afford houses and land. So it's pretty remarkable, man.
Yes, 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 it is. Jeff,
thank you, Del, for the time. I mean, it seems like an hour has gone by like that. So appreciate you being here.
Absolute pleasure.
This is great. I really, really, really like the new record. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thanks a lot for having me on. It's fun to get to talk with you guys. You guys obviously are like well-informed music snobs.
All right.
Well, no, like I say that as a compliment. Like
I didn't take it back.
I want to be, I am one as well. And it's just like, it's just very rare to actually get to have conversations about this stuff where people get references and, I don't know. It's just super cool. So I just appreciate it so much. And, like anyone taking the time to talk about my records, I don't take it for granted. And I don't know. I just, thank you.
Thank you for popping on our little podcast and thank you for your work.
Oh yeah. Cheers. Hopefully we get to talk again sometime.
I hope so.
I hope so. We got to come to the East Coast and you got to go to Birmingham.
I'll let you know when I'm there and I'll toss you on the guest list. How about that?
Ah, that'd be great.
That sounds great to me.
All right. Okay, take care.
Thanks again, Del.
All right, Del. Thanks, man.
Appreciate it, man.
Cheers.
Thirsty Thursdays, boys. Might as well get balls deep in a bottle of Gus and Brew tonight.
It's a four-leaf clover. Make a wish.
Wish you weren't so fucking awkward, bud.
Many thanks to Del Barber for his time. Check out the notes section for links to all of Del's work and a bunch of other things mentioned during the podcast. Big thanks to Sarah Bennett for making this happen.
Our theme song is Rocket Sled by Blip. Abandoned Albums was recorded at Thunderlove Studios.
Written and produced by Keith R. Higgins and Jeff Calhoun.
Engineered and mixed by Steve Beasley with the help of Mike Hunt. Edited by AJ Royce.
The songs you heard during this podcast were Still Got You by Del Barber, The Hey Rock and Roll Song by the No Regretskis, White Lines and Taillights, One Great City, No Easy Way Out, and Jared. You also heard Love Is Just a Wrecking Ball and I Told You So. Be sure to check out all of Del Barber's work wherever you stream your favorite music.
Original music by Mike Pellegrino.
If you like what you've heard, please be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating. It really does help. Thanks for listening.
At Twitter, we are at Abandon Albums. And on Instagram, we are at Abandon_albums.
Grazie.
Daily Leaf. Rob Janicki. Mike Pellegrino. Therina Vella. Ronnie Barnett. S.W. Loudon. Michael Janicki. Peyton Janicki. And our executive producer.
This is Thunderwolf.
And now, until we meet again next time, I remain as always obediently yours.
Abandoned Albums is a production of Paw Print Media.